So I've been very kindly instructed to speak louder. And I guess we can turn up the microphone if I need to do that. Also, apparently, Jayu Tal and Deborah Chamberlain Taylor's evening of chanting has been postponed till July 4th. So you need to check the website to make sure when that's really being offered. So tonight I'm going to speak about forgiveness. About a month ago, I went to a day-long with Jack Kornfield and Fred Luskin at UC Berkeley. And maybe some of you were there at that day. It was sponsored by the Greater Good Science Center, which does research into the pro-social emotions to help us understand how practices like compassion and gratitude and forgiveness can actually help relieve the very real pain and suffering that we experience in the human condition and help us cultivate practices that promote more resilience and well-being. So they were sponsoring that day with Jack and Fred. And I was very, very moved by that day. There are so many practices that help us when we're caught in the grudge and resentment and hostility that can come from very real injury and disappointment and injustice and betrayal. So I want to share some of the practices with you. This is my own integration of Jack's 12 principles and Fred's 9 steps from their books and years of teaching on forgiveness. And we'll do some of the practice exercises that they led us through that day. Because a daily forgiveness practice seems to be as essential as any of the Brahma Viharas, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. Forgiveness is as essential as those to keep our hearts open in the face of trials and tragedies and traumas of being human on a planet with other injured, frightened, confused human beings. So forgiveness practice I'm seeing is advanced wise effort to let go of the unwholesome, greed, hatred, and delusion, and to cultivate the wholesome. It's our choice, and it's our responsibility to cultivate a skillful forgiveness practice. And so that's what we'll explore this evening. The first principle is, of course, how universal the need for forgiveness is, whether forgiving ourselves, or forgiving another, or asking forgiveness from another. As Fred said, we hurt people and are hurt by people because we are people. And even though that day long gave many examples of the sort of multi-generational strife and hostility in the Middle East, in Southeast Asia, in Africa, in Ireland, the practices they taught that day were more focused on our own personal need to have a forgiveness practice. Beyond Hatred to a Non-Contentious Heart is the title of one chapter in Jack's book, Wise Heart. So we'll focus on our own personal practice this evening as well, knowing that my pain is the pain of the human condition. So Jack and Fred both taught that forgiveness is an ongoing practice. It's daily and it's lifelong. It's not a one-shot deal. From Martin Luther King, perhaps an exemplar of forgiveness. Forgiveness is not an occasional act. It's a permanent attitude. In that sense, forgiveness practice doesn't focus on the content of the injury so much. That is, it doesn't matter so much who did what to you or to who. It's our response that is the practice. From Viktor Frankl, between a stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. The last human freedom is to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. So forgiveness is something we choose to do to not perpetuate our own suffering. Fred said that not forgiving, staying in bitterness or anger or hostility, is like drinking a cup of poison and waiting for the other person to die. From E.H. Chapin, never does the human soul appear so strong as when it forgoes revenge and dares forgive an injury. It's also important to understand what forgiveness is, the inner peace and wise perspective that allows us to keep our hearts open in the face of injustice, betrayal, and harm. We're simply poisoning ourselves when we don't do that. And what it is not. Forgiveness is not a bypass of condoning or pardoning or forgetting or false reconciliation or appeasement or sentimentality. And neither is forgiveness necessarily bringing to complete resolution every individual complaint or grievance, no matter how legitimate. It is a practice, daily and lifelong, to keep the heart open in the face of trying circumstances. There's a Chinese proverb, "Forgo your anger for a moment and save yourself 100 days of trouble." So forgiveness practice must be anchored in a sense of our true nature, our Buddha nature, to remember that we and all beings are nobly born, and that the capacity for kindness is as hardwired into our neural circuitry as the tendencies to contract in pain and suffering. When we are frightened or angry or hostile, we are physiologically aroused, and forgiveness becomes biologically impossible. We have to use the practices of loving kindness, compassion, gratitude, equanimity to move us to a space in our hearts from which we can forgive. So we'll do that in our first exercise. This is Fred's exercise for dropping into a space of kindness and love. So if you would simply sit comfortably, I often add placing a hand on your heart because that really helps to calm down the nervous system. You breathe gently into your belly, slowly in and out. Breathe a sense of goodness into your belly. Breathe into your belly as though you were safe. Now remember people or things in your life you are grateful for. Savor the gratefulness throughout your body. Remember moments of kindness in your life when people have been kind to you. Then when you have been kind to others. Savor the feeling of kindness throughout your body. Remember a moment of feeling loved and cherished by someone. Then remember a moment of you loving and cherishing someone, even a beloved pet. Savor the feeling of love throughout your body. Let yourself claim the goodness of your own self now. Let that open into a sense of the goodness of humanity. This is the place within that forgiveness comes from. States of kindness, compassion, and goodwill. From here it becomes possible to forgive. Any questions or comments about the first exercise, or any reflections to share? And if not, that's okay too. These practices help bypass our body's adrenaline reactions that fuel our sense of personal threat and drama. And it allows us to reopen into a spacious calmness, and from there we can forgive. Then we begin to cultivate a willingness to let go of our personal suffering, our personal drama, our well-rehearsed personal stories and identities of victimhood, our personal complaints and bitterness that create a state of mind and heart where kindness and forgiveness are impossible. Those neural pathways of contraction and protection are well established. It's so easy to go into complaining, criticism, and contempt. We have to be willing to soften that neural cement. We have to stop adrenalizing to be safe enough to be kind. We have to set an intention to stop being in contention with the world, to stop projecting our disgruntlement onto the world, to give up resentment, bitterness, entitlement, not to deny our pain, but not to linger. We're not indifferent, but we're not stuck in drama either. Understanding, compassion, grieving, and forgiveness are the open-hearted response to a human life's vulnerability to change. The willingness, the intention, resets the compass of the heart so that we can reclaim the larger self, our larger consciousness, our larger kindness that can open to compassion for ourselves. These practices put us back on the track of integrity, dignity, and possibility. There comes an awareness beyond the self, eventually to compassion for others who have acted in misguided or harmful ways. From Catherine Ponder, when you hold resentment toward another, you are bound to that person or condition by an emotional link that is stronger than steel. Forgiveness is the only way to dissolve that link and get free. It is also necessary to become mindfully present and notice any unfinished business of the heart that still needs forgiving. So we'll do another exercise to practice that kind of mindful awareness. If you'll, again, you'll just sit comfortably, relaxing your body and allowing your attention to focus inward. Focus your awareness on your natural breathing, gently in and out. Notice any place in your body that is still holding tension. Any place in your body that is contracting. Your jaw, your throat, your chest, your fists. Are there any words or images or thoughts that come up when you focus on the tension? If this tension had words, what would it say? Is there any unfinished business to attend to here? Allow whatever you're noticing to be here with interest and curiosity. You may wish to give it a name or a label. And then return your awareness to the place of goodness inside you, and then to your breath. Any comments or questions or reflections on that practice? Okay. Both Fred and Jack emphasized the necessity of honest grieving over harm experienced as we cultivate this willingness, this intention to practice forgiveness. The heart needs to feel its legitimate pain before it can be moved to let go. Being stuck in blame can create a sense of victimhood, but honest grief work can help the underlying hurt and fear and anger resolve and move through. It makes the, the practice of forgiveness digestible and workable. From Albert Hofstetler, let the pain be pain, not in the hope that it will vanish, but in the faith that it will fit in, find its place in the shape of things, and then be not any less pain, but true to form. That's what we're looking for. Not the end of a thing, but the shape of it. So we'll do an exercise in dyads, if you turn to face someone near you, and we'll take turns, 1 minute each, to identify an injury, a hurt to yourself or to another that you would like to be able to grieve and forgive. We're not going to do the forgiveness practice itself just yet, but just identifying a grievance that you would like to grieve and forgive. So if you'll turn to someone to work with, and I'll ring the bell halfway through when it's time to switch, and then again to end, about a minute each. Make sure you take a turn to switch. The other person has a chance. If you'll come back to the large group. Finish your sentence and come back. Wow. So any questions or comments or reflections from doing that exercise? Okay, we'll keep, yes, please. There's a microphone. It's being recorded. So you have to hold it close to your mouth.
I just have a question about the part of forgiveness that has to do with the other person's participation.
You mean you want them to be accountable for what they did?
That little hook right there.
So you're wanting to be able to forgive them for what they did, whether or not they're taking that accountability, right? So that's the practice of our heart. There are practices like nonviolent communication where you can actually have a conversation with someone and hopefully get to a place where there is a recognition and an accountability. But the practice in our own heart is to be able to grieve and let go and offer forgiveness because we want our own heart open again. We don't want to carry the pain and the contraction around in our own heart. And that's why we do the forgiveness practice. So we simply work with ourselves to be able to do that. It is not in any way condoning or agreeing with what the other person did. It's just keeping our own heart open. And when I, in a moment, will lead you through Jack's meditations on forgiving ourselves, forgiving another, and asking for forgiveness, you'll see that that's a really key part of it. It's just to keep our own heart open. Yes, can we pass the mic down?
Could you possibly speak louder?
I'm going to try.
Thank you. My question would be about grieving. Because what's occurred to me in this little talk is the first thing might be to say, oh, forgive the other person, but have I really experienced grieving around something? And if you could just talk about what that would be.
It means being able to let in and let be the pain we feel from whatever has happened and to honestly acknowledge that. It's not to do a bypass of any hurt that we've experienced, but it's to be able to hold it mindfully and compassionately. We have compassion for our own experience of being hurt and then grieving that, and the grief is what allows it to let go, to move through. Otherwise, we could be doing a bypass, just skimming right over it, and it'll still be there to go off like a landmine, or we're in denial. So we actually let it be, let it in, let it be, and then we can let it go. So we practice grieving. Does that answer? Okay. And back here, and then I'll go on.
It's really helpful to hear you talk about how when we're in the throes of a really strong emotion, we don't have access to the forgiveness networks that are lurking somewhere in another region of the brain.
Right.
And I think the reason why that's so helpful for me is because I feel very, I blame myself, you know, if I'm not able to access the forgiveness immediately, mm-hmm. or I feel badly about myself. Mm-hmm. And it's just really helpful to understand the neurology of that, and that the practices that Buddhism offers and that you're talking about tonight are the neural bridge.
That's right.
You know, as we build that. So there's no blame, there's no fault. We just need that like footpath from one place mm-hmm. to another.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's why often when we do these practices, when you put your hand on your heart, it actually calms down the nervous system so that we can begin to be mindful again of what we want to do. Forgiveness is a process that happens over time, layer by layer. So we start practicing forgiveness where it's easiest. You forgive your dog for tearing up the carpet, or your child for spilling the potato salad on the kitchen floor, or yourself for getting a traffic ticket or for getting an appointment. And then you broaden and build. So you practice forgiveness in more and more challenging situations or with more and more challenging people where the stakes get higher until you're ready to tackle the unforgivable, with courage and care. So life is full of forgiveness moments, big and small, where we practice over and over again remaining open-hearted. Louis Smedes says, "You will know that forgiveness has begun when you recall those who hurt you and feel the power to wish them well." So I'm going to, once we've established this sense of loving kindness and a steady awareness of our own experience in the moment, we can begin our forgiveness practice. So I'm going to lead you just listening through Jack's three meditations on forgiveness. It's not that we have a chance to do all of that tonight, but just sort of let yourself bathe in it or steep in it. And his practices are available in his book, The Art of Forgiveness, Loving Kindness, and Peace, and they're also available in my monthly newsletter in May. So let yourself sit comfortably. I'm now channeling Jack's words. Let yourself sit comfortably, allowing your eyes to close and your breath to be natural and easy. Let your body and mind relax. Breathe gently into the area of your heart. Let yourself feel all the barriers you have erected and the emotions you have carried because you have not yet forgiven. Not forgiven yourself and not forgiven others. Let yourself feel the pain of keeping your heart closed. Breathing softly, begin reciting to yourself the following words, letting the images and feelings that come up grow deeper as you repeat them. There are many ways that I have hurt and harmed others, have betrayed or abandoned them, caused them suffering. Knowingly or unknowingly, out of my pain, fear, anger, and confusion. Let yourself remember and visualize ways you have hurt others. See the pain you have caused out of your own fear and confusion. Feel your own sorrow and regret. Sense that finally you can release this burden and ask for forgiveness. Take the time you need to picture each memory that still burdens your heart. And then as each person comes to mind, gently say, "I ask for your forgiveness. I ask for your forgiveness." And then, just as I have caused suffering to others, there are many ways that I have hurt and harmed myself. I have betrayed or abandoned myself many times, in thought, word or deed, knowingly or unknowingly. Feel your own precious body and life. Let yourself see the ways you have hurt or harmed yourself. Picture them. Remember them. Feel the sorrow you have carried from this and sense that you can release these burdens. Extend forgiveness for each act of harm one by one. Repeat to yourself, "For the ways I have hurt myself, through action or inaction, out of fear, pain, and confusion, I now extend a full and heartfelt forgiveness. I forgive myself. I forgive myself." And then, "There are many ways I have been harmed by others, abused or abandoned, knowingly or unknowingly, in thought, word, or deed. We have been betrayed." Let yourself picture and remember the many ways this is true. Feel the sorrow you have carried from this past. Now sense that you can release this burden of pain by gradually extending forgiveness as your heart is ready. Recite to yourself, I remember the many ways others have hurt, wounded, or harmed me. Out of fear, pain, confusion, and anger. I have carried this pain in my heart long enough. To the extent that I am ready, I offer you forgiveness. To those who have caused me hurt, I offer my forgiveness. I forgive you. Let yourself gently repeat these three directions for forgiveness until you find a release in your heart. For some great pains, you may not feel a release. Instead, you may experience again the burden and the anguish or the anger you have held. Touch this softly. Be forgiving of yourself for not being ready to let go and move on. Forgiveness cannot be forced. It cannot be artificial. Simply continue the practice and let the words and images work gradually in their own way. In time, you can make the forgiveness meditation a regular part of your life, letting go of the past and opening your heart to each new moment with a wise, loving kindness. Compassion, grieving, equanimity, letting go are additional practices that complement the work of forgiveness. Each offers a wise and simple form, a gracious language to encourage the heart to let go, to heal, and to come to rest. Let your own intuition guide you as to which of these meditations to practice. Stay with it as long as it serves you. Then return when you are ready to the ongoing practice of forgiveness. Any questions or comments or reflections about Jack's meditations? Okay. Here's another quote from Alden Nolan. The day the child realizes that all adults are imperfect, he becomes an adolescent. The day he forgives them, he becomes an adult. The day he forgives himself, he becomes wise. Another part of forgiveness is to include all the layers of processing experience in your forgiveness practice. When we forgive something in our body, it feels so real to us, it must be true. It can be hard to change the neural reactivity. Sometimes working in somatic-based trauma therapy is necessary to release the bodily held rage, hostility, defensiveness, or collapse into powerlessness. We do have to stop adrenalizing before we can feel safe enough to give. At the day-long, Jack answered a question from someone in the audience whose husband had been killed in 9/11. And Jack suggested somatic experiencing to work through the bodily held memories of searching through the rubble so that she could begin to do the work with forgiveness. Sometimes we have to learn new skills in experiencing and expressing the intense emotions that sometimes erupt as we focus on our experiences that need our forgiveness. We learn to take responsibility for our emotional experience, having compassion for ourselves in the moments of "there I go again." We give up all hope of a better past, and patiently, perseveringly restructure our thoughts and belief systems, especially any lingering feelings like the universe revolves around us in an entitled way, or clinging to an identity as a victim. Forgiveness practice doesn't rewrite history, but it does allow us to rewrite our story of our history. And we can re-perceive ourselves as hero rather than victim for all the courage and resiliency it takes to learn and grow enough to forgive. Finally, we allow our forgiveness practice to shift our perspectives. We begin to take things less personally. We see the struggle of other human beings. We see that suffering is universal, that forgiveness doesn't necessarily end every bit of suffering, but it makes life livable and workable. It allows us to claim our own inherent goodness and that of our fellow sufferers. We have time for questions and discussions, and then I'll read a final poem to close and do the sitting meditation. And I'm not even sure where the microphone is anymore. Yeah. Questions, this is our time now to have discussion, questions, reflections on what all of how all of this is sitting with you or how it's touching your heart. Yes, you can bring the microphone over there.
I'm wondering if there's a place in all this for acceptance. And what I mean by acceptance is that there are times when I accept who people are and what they're doing and sort of let it go after that, because it's other people's stuff and not mine.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a part of it?
So you're talking about forgiveness practice as both a kind of reflective awareness and a compassionate acceptance. It's a kind of mindful empathy for where the other person might be, and yet pulling back from staying connected or engaged or enmeshed in that, being able to have a healthy boundary. This is mine and that is yours. I love a teaching from Phil Moffat where he talks about us being affected by what's going on without being infected by what's going on. So yes, we do have to have that sense of boundary and detachment enough to say, you know, I acknowledge, I have empathy, I have compassion, and I can let that go. Does that answer the... Okay. Another question here.
If you had to say it in one sentence, how would you define forgiveness?
A practice of acknowledging and being with pain from injury or injustice or betrayal. Allowing my own forgiveness, letting go, to release the burden of that pain and to keep my heart open in the face of what's happening. That would be my one sentence. Other people. How is this practice tonight touching your heart? What is it moving to do in your own practice? Here and then here.
I've been working on a big forgiveness. And the thing that touched me so much tonight that I hadn't thought about was making it a daily practice.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes just so much sense to me, because practicing loving kindness makes sense and compassion. But the big wounds that come from an experience of betrayal or an experience of not being forgiven for an error in judgment or whatever, does I feel take a daily practice, so I really mm-hmm. am grateful and appreciate your bringing okay. that out tonight.
Thank you. As the microphone's being, did you, oh, I thought someone raised. Who else? As I'm waiting for the next person, I'm very, very interested in how we can train our minds to change our brains, to improve our lives. And Rick Hansen, whom some of you know, who wrote Buddha's Brain, calls mindfulness self-directed neuroplasticity. And I think any time we do a forgiveness practice, we are actually cultivating the rewiring of our brain. And the more in neuroscience we understand how that happens, that if you hold a very negative moment, but you're holding it in awareness with the feelings and the body sensations lit up, and if you bring right next to it in your awareness a very positive moment of compassion or empathy or generosity or gratitude, the two experiences will fire together and they will change the synaptic connections. It takes a split second to do that. When the positive experience is strong enough and powerful enough and we're really feeling it in our body, the change of the old pattern can be immediate and it can be permanent, which is how people can do trauma therapy. So the more we cultivate the compassion, the equanimity, and forgiveness, the more we're actually rewiring our brains. And over time, you can know that. You can experience that because we respond to situations differently. Another, yes, please.
Is this applicable to such things as clinical depression, serotonin, dopamine, axons, dendrites, and all that other fun stuff? Because that's something I have been diagnosed with as a child and went through therapy, went through medication. And so I'm at kind of a crossroads mm-hmm. nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
On one camp, you have the Western world with medication, which I no longer take, mm-hmm. But I've spent many years, you know, meditation and other such practices versus, you know, more traditional Eastern practices mm-hmm. where there's got to be depression there, but it's not as talked about. Mm-hmm. So is it real? Is it all psychosomatic? Is it all in your head? What's your take on that?
I'll try to answer that simply. Depression does cause neurochemical changes in the brain, which is why for some people when you reset the neurochemistry of the brain with serotonin, it can lift the depression. When people want to work with depression not using medication, the three things that are recommended now are exercise, which creates a different neurochemistry in your brain, social connection, because engaging with people where we feel safe and trusting releases oxytocin in the brain, and then learning something new. And the effect of learning something new is that it grows new neural cells in the hippocampus, which is where we process memory. And when we have more power in the hippocampus to process memory, we can begin to process new, more positive memories. So those are the three things that are now recommended for people who want to deal with depression other than medication. I think one of the most powerful things we can do is to feel loved and feel loving, and to get the oxytocin flowing in the brain, because that can create radical changes. So to cultivate a loving kindness practice, a compassion practice for ourselves and for other people, I think is one of the best ways we can meet depression head on. And I wish you well with that. Thank you. Any other questions? Or I'm loving the questions. It allows me to do a riff in the back here.
Hello. I came late, so I'm not sure if I missed your introduction. So I don't mean to be a contrarian. I call myself a dialectical okay. thinker. In the process of forgiveness, you know, first of all, like you mentioned, the 911 mm-hmm. mm-hmm. person. So many of us have an idea that 9-1-1 was actually, there's another story behind 9-1-1. So the point being, if you're forgiving someone who actually wasn't the perpetrator, then that shows, on one hand, the folly of holding vengeance for a person who didn't even commit the crime, mm-hmm. so to speak. Mm-hmm. That's on one hand. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if you're familiar with Fred Luskin's work mm-hmm. on forgiveness, there are stages you have to go through before you can actually mm-hmm. ready for forgiveness. Of course, he's coming from a more psychological school than a Buddhist school, mm-hmm. although he does incorporate Buddhist thought. So my point being, like, if you're a parent, it's your duty to identify and correct your children when there's some transgression. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're failing as a parent. Mm-hmm. If you're a teacher, if you don't identify and correct your students, you'll be fired. You're not doing your job. Mm-hmm. And as a partner or as a friend, mm-hmm. if you don't identify and correct your partner when they cross you or betray you, mm-hmm. you're failing in your role as a partner or friend. Mm-hmm. So how does that, these dynamics enter into the forgiveness process? Okay.
So I can remember and respond to all of that. Starting with the second part first. So part of the introduction was my teaching tonight came from a day-long that I did with Fred Luskin and Jack Kornfield at UC Berkeley. So I've incorporated a lot of Fred's teachings. And his first book was Forgive for Good, but his second book now is Forgive for Love. It's for couples. And the couples practice forgiveness with each other. So when a parent or a teacher or a partner is correcting, at least the current wisdom seems to be, we're correcting behavior, but you're absolutely compassionately, empathically embracing the being of the partner or the child or the student, so that behavior is corrected, but the person is loved. So that does tie into a forgiveness practice where you're forgiving the behavior, but completely loving the person. And then what you're saying about 9/11, one of the more beautiful responses to 9/11 that I learned of was two women at the moment, I'm not going to remember their names, but they made a documentary called Beyond Belief. And it was two women whose husbands both were killed in 9/11. And they found each other through a support group for widows. And they lived just a few miles from each other. So they began meeting, and they decided they wanted to do something to really try to keep their hearts open. And so what they did was they decided to, they were both bicyclists, so they decided to raise money by biking from Ground Zero to their home in Massachusetts. It was 200 and some miles. And they raised money. And then they took that money, it was $115,000, I think, to Afghanistan. And they met with women in Afghanistan who had also been widowed in the conflict. So they met as widows who lost their husbands in all the conflict that's been happening. And they helped the women set up cooperatives, I think it was raising chickens, so that they could support themselves. And there's now a foundation. So that was their response to their own husbands being killed in 9/11. And I just thought that was such a beautiful story of how we work to keep our hearts open and become an example for other people to keep their hearts open. So I'm glad you raised that. Thank you for your question. Other questions or comments? Then I'd like to close with a poem by John O'Donohue from his book, To Bless the Space Between Us. It's for someone who did you wrong. And then we'll just sit quietly for a moment or two in meditation. Though its way is to strike in a dumb rhythm, stroke upon stroke as though the heart were an anvil, the hurt you sent had a mind of its own. Something in you knew exactly how to shape it to hit the target. Slipping into the heart through some wound window left open since childhood. While it struck outside, it burrowed inside, made tunnels through every ground of confidence. For days it would lie still until a thought would start it again. Meanwhile, you forgot, went on with things, and never even knew how that perfect shape of hurt still continued to work. Now a new kindness seems to have entered time, and I can see how that hurt has schooled my heart in a compassion I would otherwise have never learned. Somehow now I've begun to glimpse the unexpected fruit your dark gift had planted, and I thank you for your unknown work. So we'll just sit quietly for a few moments. May we and all beings find a way to reopen our hearts and forgive.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.